under, we haven't even been providing findings, but we've been doing zoning permits that respond to those criteria that they adopted. So I figured it would be best if we actually just adopt it into code.
So it's been about 4 years. It's interesting because there's so many things that are not allowed on property.
Yeah.
And they're allowing it.
Yeah.
And just a curiosity for me. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. And a lot of them, I mean, they're usually like farmland that where they just want to use it as an accessory structure.
It's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Remember when, I think it was before I was here, the accessory structures. Did we answer your question?
You did. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, any other questions or comments on any of the staff report or recommended?
Wasn't there one you had a question for us?
What was the first one?
The first one you did have a question for us and we didn't answer.
We didn't do the straw poll.
Oh, what was it?
What was it? I started writing down at the admin. You said you wanted feedback on
extension.
Oh, extensions. Yeah. If you guys come,
you like how I take notes.
Awesome.
Got it. Well,
yeah.
I can't remember what it was.
I would like to do a straw poll on whether you guys would be comfortable with staff having sort of unlimited discretion to continue approving extensions to a permit as long as the code hasn't changed, or would you like there to be a limit on it?
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yeah, it's
further on down on that page, mm-hmm. you said that once the building permit had been approved, that there mm-hmm. was, even if the zoning changed,
so if you're,
there was no time limit?
Yeah, so if your zoning permit expires next week and you get your building permit today, you never have to go back through and renew or extend or reapply for that zoning permit, even if we change the code, even if something changed. And if that building permit, I don't know how long building permits last, but say it was extended several times and you're 3 years down the line and you're getting, I don't even know if that's possible. I don't know anything about building permits.
So that was my question. That was actually my question, like how long is a building permit good for? Mm-hmm. After the zoning has changed, is there
usually
a point?
6 months.
Yeah, it's usually pretty short.
Months?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
but
okay,
but if say 6 months from now you're finally building the thing and then our code changes, you never have to go back through and get a zoning permit because you've already gotten that approved building.
My question would be, if they hadn't started building it within that 6 months,
then
and the zoning had changed, they would have to go back mm-hmm. and start over. Okay,
yeah.
That's all I needed.
Yeah, and it's sort of a domino effect, a little bit unfortunately, but a little bit fortunately. But if you get your zoning permit approval and you extend it two times, and then the code changes right when you get your zoning permit, right? And then you, say, extend that two times, and then you get your building permit, it could be a while after we've changed the code, and you can still be grandfathered into whatever was approved at the time of your application.
We currently don't have a time limit on that. The zoning change for a building permit to be issued. I mean, what's that? Is that what we're voting
Yeah,
on?
That's what we're voting on.
Okay,
so are you okay with us sort of having that unlimited approval, right? But then again, if the code has changed, we would say, okay, we're not going to just keep extending it. You actually have to go back through and reapply under our current code.
Okay. Our current code says for a CUP and a land use decision, I think is the language, that it says the planning director may extend it for 1 year, and it doesn't have a limit. I'm not really comfortable with that. Because we've done that because folks have done their homework. So what if it's a controversial matter and they just keep extending it and you're the aggrieved adjoining property owner?
Or if your property is sold.
If your property is sold or you can't sell your property because you're expecting a development. In the EFU zone, it's pretty statutory, it's pretty clear, but in other zones, it's not. I'm not sure, mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's up to the Planning Commission's discretion. But yeah, Tamara's right that there is statutory language around EFU extensions. I think it's limited to like 4 years.
That's what you have up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, thank you. But other than that, it's currently your initial approval is valid for 2 years, and then the director can grant unlimited 1 year extensions. And I don't think our code currently has that if the code hasn't changed provision.
That's right. That's a big. Do you remember what page that's on in your?
Yeah, I think it's 90. Let's see.
So I think I'm tracking what you're saying, and I think what we're recommending is in agreement. So you can extend it, but I mean, I'd be comfortable with something like mm-hmm. a CUP to extend it for 2 years. Just
page 101. Yeah, that's for conditional uses.
cares about that. My only concern is if a piece of property has somebody interested in putting a development on it, but they push it out and push it out and push it out until, say, the news is old and people are no longer concerned about happening, and then they put it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm,
that's my only concern. As you know, my tendency is always to protect the property owners, so I just want to make sure something like that doesn't happen. We've had a lot of situations, like even when we moved, where we did racetracks coming, you know, things like that, you know, and all these things were going on. You just never knew what was going to happen. So
that's right.
Having a timeline,
some certainty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe the language in 101 isn't strict enough. So maybe a site plan review or CUP is valid for 2 years with an opportunity for a 1 year extension.
Oh, and then 127 is the administrative provisions for that. It's, yeah, similar.
One oh one is CUP. Okay. And 127 is the land use decision.
And then under A, there's currently a provision that the applicable criteria have not changed. No more than 5 1-year extensions may be authorized under this section. And then if it's not in the farm or forest zone, it doesn't currently have that. Or no, it does, sorry. But yeah, it's up to the commission if you want to keep it the way it is or change it.
Well, in your, yeah, I think the language you have is what Commissioner Killian's asking for permits not in the farm or forest zone. It's valid for 2 years with an opportunity to extend an additional year. That's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. It, regardless of whether or not the code has changed. Am I reading it right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the other people think. It's a little, it's convoluted. I think we could trunk it. Well, and it looks complicated because there's a lot of redlining. And it really just says it's the 2 years plus 1 year.
Plus one.
But that 1 year is providing that we haven't changed the code, et cetera, et cetera. And that gives the applicant, because some of these applications are very complicated and very expensive to secure, and it takes, even before they come to us, they've been doing a lot of homework. So 2 years plus one, 2 years is granted, and the one provided there haven't been other significant code changes. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, it does. I don't like the open-ended number.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we think one-year extension or up to five?
It seems like a lot.
Just one?
I feel like for you guys, I think one is the better. More protects you, and also if it comes up and needs changes at that point, it can be made at that point.
I think three is reasonable. Five is a lot.
Three.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it took me 8 years. So.
Oh,
I had to reapply the planning commission lots of times.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So we're thinking 3 1-year extensions. We get like an informal. Yes or no?
Three. Two-year with a one-year extension.
Yeah, sorry.
Total of three.
Total of 3 years.
Yeah.
1 1-year extension, 2 year guarantee.
Yep. That sounds reasonable to me.
Thank you for saying that.
Okay, and then so I appreciate your guys' time on this. There's one other thing I wanted to address before we open it up to public comments. And this is another kind of big piece that I think is really important to understand the nuance of. But this two-step process for administrative review, when we get developments that are requesting, that are triggering administrative review, right? They have a TIA, they have unique situations in terms of water or sewer. We were really struggling with like how to phrase this in a way that is in line with the actual reality of development and the timelines that are required by state agencies, while also meeting our requirements for saying you need to ensure that what you say you're going to be providing is actually going to get provided on the site before you start putting up buildings, right? So we initially provided language to you guys that's actually what's in the Article 5 recommendations. But we also went back to the development community, and we've had a number of meetings where we've asked them to please, like, help us craft this language in a way that actually works for you without being, like, while also meeting our minimum recommendations. And we got some initial feedback, and we kind of went back to the drawing board. And most recently, we received on, if you go to page 137 and 138 of your packet, and AWS provided some really excellent language with regard to how development works in terms of providing water and sewage. Because we acknowledge that we're a little bit over our skis when we start talking in the weeds about water and how it's provided and water rights and like sewage disposal. And so they provided this language that it goes a little bit beyond our initial recommendation of just saying it has to be at a quality and quantity adequate for the proposed use. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to understand that what our recommendation is, and this is in line with state law and it's in line with how other jurisdictions handle it, is that at the site plan review, that initial process, we only need a basic understanding that it is feasible for you to get water and sewer and industrial wastewater. We don't need any like real in-the-weeds details about how it's going to be provided. We just need to know that it's possible. And then at that second stage, that zoning permit approval, the final step before you get a building permit, we want to see a permit in hand. We want to make sure that you are actually going to provide those services that you said you're going to provide before you go in for building permit approval. And then it needs to be constructed before you get your final certificate of occupancy, but that's kind of outside of our process, right? That's a building permit process. So AWS provided this excellent language, and we're going to be recommending it under review criteria in D, that rather than just saying adequate for the proposed use, they recommended saying that new developments that will rely on groundwater must either one, provide an estimated annual water usage, and two, demonstrate that all OWRD authorizations have been received. The only change we'll be making is we can't really incorporate code language that requires a condition of approval. It's just sort of a nuance of the Oregon planning system. So we'll probably just say, or that we'll try to craft a way that doesn't require us to institute a condition of approval, but that those OWRD authorizations can be authored. I think that'll probably look like a service provider letter or something like that, where OWRD will say that it is a basically serviceable site. So if it's a letter, notice or memorandum of understanding from the service provider evidencing a commitment to serve the site, to us that's totally sufficient, as long as they're providing the source of the water and a targeted date of delivery. That's perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for. And same with adequate sewage disposal. Again, we'll make that little tweak to eliminate the requirement of a condition of approval. But if they're showing us that there's a basic level of serviceability, I think this language is perfect for what we're looking for, and much appreciated from the AWS team.
Daisy,
yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
No problem.
Are you kind of referring to, there was an email sent out this morning to us from Jacob Kane from the Port of Morrow, kind of addressing their desire for the sewer issue language, like they have a lot of it struck. Are you kind of talking about that? Is that what you're addressing right now?
We received two different recommendations. The AWS recommendations came in before packets went out, so they're included in your actual packet. The port email that was received like this morning was yesterday evening. We had considered that language, which they submitted a while back. We incorporated some parts of it. So, for example, in the code update that you see, we've tweaked a little bit of the language, but at its core, the port's recommendation was to say that port facilities are essentially exempt from this requirement. And after like substantial consultation with our land use council, there is a minimum requirement for planning that we do need to still, they're still subject to Goal 11, they're still subject to the requirement that, for example, providing sewer outside of an urban growth boundary. Those are some pretty complicated questions that we really dug into with our Land Use Council. And we arrived at this point where we feel like that language with those tweaks more adequately addresses our requirements. And so again, at the site plan review process state, the other thing is, I think too, that the port's recommendations this morning that you guys saw sort of conflated the two processes and said, oh, we only need basic serviceability across the board, but we really do need an actual permit at the time of zoning permit approval so that we can ensure you're not going in for building permit approval without a knowledge of what is actually going to be included. And those DEQ permits and OWRD, it gets really complicated. It gets really complicated, and there's a lot that can change. And again, acknowledging that we are not the experts that are able to look at that and say, like, yes, it's in line with the original approval, we have decided that having a permit in hand is the best way for us to ensure that facility is actually going to get built.
Okay, so am I correct in hearing that you said the port basically wanted to be exempt from the conditions?
Yeah, I think the port's representative is on the call, and I would love to have, I'm sure she's going to be able to testify or provide a little bit of context for their comments. And so we're definitely open to hearing that perspective. But again, I think it gets really complicated when we start talking about like water provision and sewer provision, and there isn't an exemption for port facilities to not have to go through a planning process in state law. So in order to cover our bases, we feel that the AWS recommended language is more in line with our minimum requirements and our like stated outcomes than the port's recommended language was.
So is the code staying intact where they will have to comply with the conditions that everybody else has to comply with? Is that staying in the code? We're not striking that, are we?
Yes, sir, that's correct. And currently our code actually lacks a serviceability requirement. There's we just don't have that lever to have that very specific language requiring them to show that those permits are in hand. So this would be implementing those standards, and it would apply across the board, regardless of who your water provider is, et cetera.
Okay, great, thank you.
And I think the recommended changes just add a little bit more of the bigger picture. The way the Oregon planning process works, we don't have State Environmental Policy Act compliance. If you go to other states, you'll take the land use entity and all of the natural resource entities, all of the service providers, transportation, and it's a nuanced team. In Oregon, the consolidated process happens at the land use phase. And so that's why Daisy is explaining if it's a conditional use permit or if it's anything other than check the box, those standards are 100% clear and objective, we have to submit it to an administrative review, what we call the type 2. When you submit for the administrative review, and now it sounds like we're leaning and we'll send that sort of general notice out, hey, there's an application filed, and that goes to agencies as well. And that gives them the opportunity to give us the materials to write a report. And that's also why, and there's some reasons why I think both the port and AWS don't want us to say we need that final permit in hand, because some of those state agency permits take a long time to get. But we don't have any other mechanism to show that they've met all those requirements unless they have the permit in hand. There's some flexibility that we can do by saying we'll issue our zoning permit or zoning clearance, but you can't have the certificate of occupancy from the building department until, say, the water line is in the ground. And that's okay. We just need to know that there's a clear regulatory or legal path forward to complying with all those conditions. Dan would have another way of explaining it if he were here. But.
Yeah, that's good. Any additional questions to staff at this time?
I do have one question. Can we get more? How do I get more information? Can I research the OWRD process? myself, is that okay?
Oh, for sure.
To figure out what they ask, what they test for, or what they have, what the requirements are.
Oh, yeah, and super, it gets super complicated, and honestly, it might be worthwhile to have, like, at some point, a work session where we invite maybe, like, Sean or Chris,
or
to have those experts come in and talk through their processes with the Planning Commission so you can understand it on a, like, broader level. But as far as our processes are concerned, the typical, what something would go through, if it has, say, an industrial septic system, we would provide site plan review as the first step, where we'd do a general, they would provide us with a letter that says, like, generally the site can get a septic permit. We'd submit that approval, and then we would get a land use compatibility statement, where we would sign off on it saying, yes, the use is compatible with our land. Then they would go back to the state agencies and have that full, like, DEQ site evaluation, where they actually test the soils, they dig test pits, they do, like, it's a very intensive process, and again, it can take a really long time. They get that permit, and then they would come back and get zoning permit approval, and they can turn around the next day and get a building permit. That's our mechanism as best as we're able to, and we really have looked into it to try to find a way around it in order to cut down on the timelines, but we feel that that's the most appropriate way for us to confirm that those requirements are going to be met, and then they can get their building permit, construct the thing, and
maybe I speak out of turn, but I think that as long as we keep those processes in place, it protects our local environment, right? Totally.
I think so, yeah.
The DQ.
We feel that it does. Yeah, and we don't want to get too in the weeds on us being the regulators of those things. We just want to make sure that those standards are being met.
As Dan counseled us, he doesn't want us deciding whether or not they're going to qualify for a permit from DEQ. You have that permit in hand, there's no questions asked about it.
Yeah.
Or same is true for a water right or a water certificate. This is what they're proposing. OWD looks at it and says, yep, that's part of this certificate or this water right. And it's clear, that's all we need. And they can go ahead and do our final sign-off.
I do have one other question just regarding that. Do you know if they've done any kind of measuring as far as the water availability in our groundwater areas? Like, for some of these things are going to use a lot of water. Do we know if they're going to drain all our wells, or do we know that yet?
So it's always dangerous to talk about water law. And that's exactly why we defer to OWRD. So I've been in lots of hearings where people, for example, oppose a subdivision, and that if each individual parcel is proposed to have an exempt well, there's nothing a local planning office can do about it. Even if there's, in Oregon, based on prior appropriation doctrine, if a new well negatively harms an existing well, that existing well has the privilege of deepening their well. So, but if you're applying for new water rights, that's a whole different story. And a lot of our county, most of it, I would say, or the north half of it, is in a critical groundwater area where the state's not issuing new water rights or permits or certificating. But how much measuring they do, I don't know. And that's really in their weeds. That proposed use, that's part of, that's covered under this certificate or water right, then we're good to go.
Mm-hmm. And we've also gotten really deep into the weeds on, like, when the port provides water to an industrial development, there's a whole different set of standards they have to comply with. And they have their own water rights that are subject to, it's a totally different process, and they are still subject, they are a municipal jurisdiction. They're still subject to the same standards under the state law for urbanization. That if the city of Boardman wanted to provide water outside the city limits, it would be the same thing. So, thank you. I just want to make sure if anyone online is raising their hand that we're able to see it.
Okay, any additional questions? If not, at this time, I'm in person first on public testimony or comments, and then we'll move to online.
Your turn.
Hi, all. My name is Megan Lynn, and I'm here on behalf of Amazon Web Services, so AWS. Business address 1120 Northwest Couche Street, Portland 97204. So I think AWS's objective here is actually very similar to what we've heard from the county. We want to be subjected to a land use code that allows thoughtful growth in the county while supporting economic development while also addressing potential adverse impacts to the residents of the community, the environment. And we think the approach that the county is proposing is also in line with kind of the general framework which we are hoping gets adopted, which is consistency with state laws. And these are state laws that emphasize predictable, efficient process for issuance of land use permits, clear review standards and timelines. And that's really important for developers who have to do phased developments. And then proper deference to state agencies who have expertise and authority for some of these technical permits. And from what we've heard, that seems very much in line with what you all are proposing as well. I just want to cover two basic topics. So the first is going to be some potential unintended consequences if the current draft as is adopted. So we'll just be flagging a few concerns. Most of these are going to be clarifying rather than like huge changes. We just want to make sure that it's clear from the code what will be expected of developers. And the second is, you already have our proposed changes from pages 132 to 139 of the packet. We just wanted to explain some of the reasoning behind some of those changes to the extent it's helpful as you're considering. So to start, as Daisy noted, the code would subject data center development to site plan review initially, which is an administrative process. And the review criteria for that includes all the review criteria for zoning permits. So if you're under site plan review, you've got to comply with all the site plan review criteria, but you've also got to comply with all the zoning permit criteria. So I just flagged that because, you know, in adopting some of our changes in 137 to 138, there's potentially inconsistency with some of the zoning permit requirements. And I think we'll need to be additional clarity on if you're going in, which one are you really subjected to? Are you subjected to the zoning permit criteria or the site plan review criteria? Since technically, I think you're subjected to both. In this process, you've got the site plan review, and then you've got a zoning permit afterwards for each building or structure that's going to get built, and it's to confirm compliance with the site plan review approval and to confirm conditions of approval have been met. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of the two-step process that they've proposed for data center developments. And generally speaking, we're not opposed to that. We just find that there are three kind of pretty major issues that might render this process infeasible for data center developers if not corrected or clarified. Mm-hmm. So the first is, I think everyone's on board with this, that conditions of approval are not required to be clear and objective, but it sounds like that is the intent of all parties. So we would just ask for language reflecting that that requirement. The second is that right now conditions of approval could relate to construction, could relate to operations, could relate to, and the timing is really different. And based on our reading of the code, it's not clear if all conditions of approval are going to be required to be met at every zoning permit stage. So let's say you have zoning permit approval and you go in for your first zoning permit, you're building your first structure. Maybe it's fence, maybe it's the first building, and you're going in for that first zoning permit. Which conditions of approval have to be met at that stage versus for the second building, for example, if there's two buildings? So we would just we would ask for clarity there, and we see that there could be potentially a lot of either delays or rendering the process pretty much like infeasible. For example, there's a catch-22 if a condition of approval requires construction of an improvement, but you need a zoning permit for that construction of that improvement. then how could you ever get the zoning permit if one of their criteria for getting the zoning permit is to show that all conditions of approval have been met? So we just want clarity there so you're not end up in this place where it's actually impossible to meet the conditions of approval. Mm-hmm. And on page, I believe it's 87 of the packet, on the last, this is the county's proposed revisions to the code. The last sentence on 5.020G says, and this has to do with traffic improvements, to the extent their traffic mitigation is required, that required improvements, if any, shall be permitted and constructed prior to issuance of a certificate of occupancy. We would propose that for basically all improvements, because the construction of improvements likely will happen closer to certificate of occupancy stage. And a lot of these improvements address impact mitigation. And so this makes sense to do it at occupancy, because that's when you start to see impacts, right? Like for electricity, water, sewage, you wouldn't really see those impacts prior to occupancy. You'd see those when the building starts being occupied. So we would, at least for these improvements, we would ask that that same language be, and that same trigger with the certificate of occupancy be implemented for other improvements that are subject to conditions of approval, to avoid the catch-22 issue and an acknowledgement that that's really when you'd start to see impacts that might need to be mitigated. And then the third thing is the last thing with the current code. And this has to do with those third-party state agency permits. You all have, it sounds like you totally understand, there are long lead times for some of these permits. And so requiring a permit in hand, like, the timeline for that needs to work for development. And so, air permits can take multiple years, the DEQ permits. And we would also ask that those be tied to occupancy, because those are that's when you would end up having to actually use the permits. And we'll just give you an example of another catch-22 situation. So DEQ won't issue the septic permit until it receives a land use compatibility statement, a LUX. The county can't sign the LUX until the zoning permit or the site plan approval has been issued. But it's impossible to get that approval if one of the criteria is proof that septic permit is in hand. So you end up with this situation where, like how would you ever, you would need that permit in hand. You need to say that permit needs to be issued by the time of the certificate of occupancy. I think, Tamara, you mentioned that that's a possibility. We would highly urge that it be the trigger for we couldn't really think of another way to do this in a way that would be feasible. We went round and round and round. We agree we want to make sure that these things are permitted and in deference to state agencies who are going to be issuing these permits. We're open to discussing, but from our internal discussions, we couldn't really see another time point at which it would be feasible, sort of at a broad base. And we'll just also say that, you know, these codes, they have to apply broadly to lots of different developments, lots of different types of industrial proposals. So it can't just be, you know, this works once. It has to work every time. So, and I will just say that, you know, LUBA, you've talked about feasibility. LUBA has said that, you know, if an approval criteria requires an applicant to secure a state agency permit, the record only needs to demonstrate that state agency permit is not precluded as a matter of law. That's, I think, what you all mentioned. And Lou has also said that, you know, conceptual design information is acceptable in recognition that state agency is going to be the agency with the technical expertise. And it sounds like you all are well aware of that. I will also mention that requirement and the next requirement, that the third-party permits for water, sanitary, sewer, wastewater, these are two requirements that are actually in 5.010 under zoning permits, and they're only applicable potentially to site plan review, mm-hmm, under that first criteria that says we incorporate all the zoning permit criteria for zoning permits mm-hmm. into site plan review. So if there's like, there might be exception language there that fixes some of these issues, but we raise them anyway with, and with respect to the third party permits, potential with, for water, sanitary, sewer, wastewater, and electric services, those are potentially even more problematic if the applicant itself is not the one who is going to be applying for those permits. Sometimes, often those are the third party service providers, and the applicant would have no control or potentially even insight into the timing for that. So, those are our comments on the draft code as written. And then you saw our proposal, which again is at pages 132 to 139. It sounds like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that you all will be adopting portions of this. You said 137 to 138, is that correct?
The transportation, sorry, I see.
No, oh, yes.
The transportation related provisions, I think we need to break that out and talk about that separately. I think there maybe is a misunderstanding about the intention of like road use agreements and how that plays into the process. And the staff still feel very strongly that the TIA, just based on Oregon's transportation system planning rules, there's not really a way to get around TIAs going through an administrative process. And I are going to continue to recommend that. I don't think that it makes sense to circumvent the public process when we're talking about especially substantial transportation mitigation, but just in general, when you're adding 400 trips to a system, there's a lot of discretion that opens us up to appeals and additional scrutiny, I think unnecessarily. I think 400 trips per day is very high. Most jurisdictions don't even get close to that when we talk about TIA requirements. And once a development hits 400 trips per day, we are going to continue recommending that that is an automatic, at least type 2 process, that there's going to be level of discretion that requires a public process. So I want to take out the TIA stuff, and I appreciate your recommendations. I think it's very creative, but we're going to continue to recommend that TIA applications go through a public process. Other than that, much of your language related to water, sewer, and wastewater for these developments, and again, this only applies to developments that are not on an exempt well, an existing water right, or like an on-site septic that's under that threshold where it's reviewed locally. It's just the ones that have to be reviewed by state agencies and through a more nuanced process that, again, is outside of our levels of expertise, that we also feel that triggers a level of discretion that definitely requires, at the very minimum, a type 2 process. But other than that, your language related to those things, I think, is extremely appreciated. We will be adopting it in our recommendation, I think, if the Planning Commission supports that. With the exception of the pieces that would subject the applicant to a condition of approval, because don't have the authority really to have a standard that requires a condition of approval. That's also sort of a catch-22 okay. in terms yeah. of the state.
So two things in response mm-hmm. to that. So for the road use agreement, maybe the term is not the right term, but I think we would also anticipate that it be subjected to administrative review. I don't think that is... I think it was more... and maybe the language here isn't super clear, and we can work on that, but I think the thought was that there was a way to proactively enter into a road use agreement that addresses impacts for proposed development, that would be an acceptable method of mitigating impacts for development.
I see.
Because of a timeline issue, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the delay of like going through the review in the midst of kind of getting something permitted might be the thing that is like the most difficult piece of it. So we would want to do it at a time when you would absolutely know with a good enough level of certainty what the proposed development looks like, what the traffic impacts would be, mm-hmm. and what the likely mitigation would need to be, and all of that would get vetted through a public notice and comment period. And the road use agreement, I know, might not be the proper term, or because I know that term has been used differently mm-hmm. in this mm-hmm. county, mm-hmm. so we can choose a different words for that, but that would be the idea.
I think we could work through.
Oh, Chair.
No, yeah. I think we could work through some language because when we first read it, it sort of sounded very crudely like, well, we can kind of deal with the public works director.